Yes, well, we found out a few days ago that the stalker was actually Zell's son. John Jr.? She asked, thinking of how large Zell's oldest son had been, how menacing. He used to tell them that there was someone in the woods, chase them around and scare them when they were little. No, the other one. Ty. Bright flashed back to one of the last times Jency and Everett went to the hideaway. Jency had been so spooked by then, scared of her own shadow and jumpy all the time. It was Everett who'd asked Bright to come with them, to stand guard outside and keep an eye out so they could have some alone time. Jency and Everett were going away to college together. At least that had been the plan. Bright felt they'd have plenty of alone time then, but Everett had asked, so she'd said yes. She'd sat outside the hideaway with a flashlight, feeling like an idiot. She and Everett had never discussed that night, how ridiculous she'd felt, how jealous she'd been that Jency was the one inside with Everett, and not her. She remembered, with the shock of realization, the pieces falling into place after all these years. Ty, quiet and unassuming, had happened by as she kept watch. She'd suspected nothing, and, desperate for attention from a male, had been receptive to his attempt to strike up a conversation. Jency had heard the two voices and sent Everett outside to see what was going on. Seeing Ty there, he'd smiled at them and left them to talk, disappearing back inside the copse of trees, but not before giving them a thumbs up. Ty had kissed her that night, his hands groping and grabbing, growing more urgent. She'd pull back, shocked at what was happening and how fast. She'd said his name, her voice seeming to break him out of some sort of trance. He'd stood up quickly, stepped away from her, apologizing as he backed farther and farther away, then turned and ran. Now she tried to remember. Had he seemed angry when he'd seen Everett? Given any indication of what was to come? Days later, Everett was blitz-attacked by someone in a ski mask as he ventured into the woods to meet Jency. Jency returned home, only to hear what had happened hours later when Everett's mom called her from the hospital. A few days later, Jency was gone. Leaving, she'd said, was the best thing for all of them. She'd made out with Jency's stalker. Had she told Jency what had happened with Ty? Had they giggled about it afterward, mused over whether something would develop between them? She couldn't remember. Did Jency remember that? She wanted to excuse herself and go throw up in the pool bathroom. Lance was staring at her. "I'm just remembering that time," she said. "I think Zell just feels weird, you know, coming around since what happened." She didn't do anything wrong. Bright felt defensive of Zell, of herself, of everyone who'd been inadvertently involved with the situation. "Oh, we know that, and there are no hard feelings. It's just awkward. The police are involved, and I just think until it gets resolved, she's keeping her distance." Bright nodded. "I can understand that, but it sucks." He laughed, more out of relief than humor. "That sums it up quite nicely," he said. He looked over at Jency, who was, it was obvious, trying to get away from the neighbor. "Just don't let on that I told you, okay?" She made the little sign she and Jency used to use, swearing their silence to each other. They used to keep each other's secrets. Now they kept secrets from each other. Jency hadn't told her about this. Jency had told Everett and not her why she was even back. She drew two fingers across her lips, zipping them shut. "Mum's the word," she said. Jency had finally managed to escape the long-winded neighbor, walking quickly away as if the woman might whip out a lasso and yank her back like a cartoon character. She caught Lance's eye, pretended to wrap her hands around her own neck and choke herself. He laughed. As she made her way back over to him, she scanned the pool deck like she always did, accounting for four children instead of two. She spotted a woman hugging Alec on the other side of the pool, saw the familiar way her whole body inclined toward his, the possessiveness that hung in the air between them. "This one's mine," the woman's body said. When the woman looked up and Jency saw her profile, she recognized the face from the photos in Lance's house. Deborah. The name bloomed inside of her like a poisonous plant, a Venus flytrap opening its leaves, inviting the unsuspecting to fall inside and be consumed. She'd known this was coming, yet she'd hoped it wouldn't happen, that she and Lance and the rest of them could somehow stay cocooned inside this summer forever. But what had they talked about just today? Summer was ending. The back-to-school commercials were coming on, the spiral notebooks and packages of paper crowding the end caps in every store. She felt the mounting pressure to make a decision. Stay or go. Enroll the girls in the local school, or find somewhere else to land. With each day that ebbed away, she was that much closer to having to pull the trigger. Watching Deborah hug her son, she felt the gun go off inside her, the ricochet resounding in her heart as the trigger got pulled for her. Lance's eyebrows knitted together as she detoured away from him, her eyes seeking out Bright instead, who was helping Christopher into the pool. She didn't look back at Lance, didn't want to see him see his wife for the first time in months. She beelined over to Bright, feeling like the schoolgirl she once was, wanting to talk to her best friend about a crisis. She and Bright had struggled to connect this summer. It was as if each wanted to say more than they could to the other. As if, once they started talking, they would say too much. So they said very little. Jency felt regret for not opening up to her friend, for withholding herself. And yet she sensed Bright had done the same. She plopped down on the side of the pool just as she had done the first time they'd talked at the beginning of the summer. Then she'd marveled over the changes in Bright, the lovely, capable woman she'd blossomed into. She'd envied her, too, the house, the husband, the child, the contentment. But Jency had felt an increasing uncertainty bubbling under the surface, recognized the discontent that had crept in over the course of the summer. Jency didn't know what had changed, and she didn't feel she could ask. She sensed she was the last person Bright would discuss it with, yet she longed to be that person in her friend's life, mostly because she needed Bright to be that person in hers. She wondered if they could somehow make their way back, and figured that she could be the one to start carving a path in that direction. Maybe the one who did the leaving had to be the one to make the way back. "So," she said, getting Bright's attention, "looks like Lance's wife just showed up." She saw the shock register on Bright's face, and would have enjoyed it if not for the situation. "You should see the look on your face," she said, laughing a little in spite of herself. Bright scanned the pool until she found the mother and child reunion taking place. She turned back to look at Jency. "Why aren't you over with Lance, staking your claim?" she asked, a sense of urgency in her voice. She made a little shooing motion in Lance's direction. Jency allowed a quick glance in Lance's direction, saw that his eyes had now found what she had already seen. She measured her words, stating them carefully, emotion-free. "Because I don't have a claim." She hoped she sounded like she meant it. She wanted to mean it. She tried not to think of the summer they'd had, the unexpected joy she'd found with him, the nights spent in his arms. He'd brought something back to her, carried it in his hands like a bunch of flowers and laid it at her feet. The word was on the tip of her tongue, but she couldn't say it, not even to herself. One night, he'd tried to say it, but she'd laid a finger on his lips. "No," she'd instructed, "let's not do that to each other." "Why?" he'd asked, a hurt look on his face. She hadn't been able to answer him. "Just, let's not," was all she'd said. As she watched Deborah walk with Alec toward Lance, she felt all the words she hadn't said come to her. "It's not too late," Bright said, sounding exactly like the Bright she remembered. "It might need to be," she responded, forcing herself to look away from the sight of Lance standing to greet the woman who'd been in their midst all summer, a ghost that had haunted them as surely as if she'd dragged chains around in his attic. Bright continued to watch the scene. "Is he hugging her?" Jency asked, then quickly said, "No, don't tell me." Bright glanced at Christopher, who was perfectly safe in the water with floaties on his arms, then back at Jency. "He didn't hug her," she said. She raised her eyebrows. "Because he wants to be with you." "I'm not going to break up a family if there's still a chance for them." She looked at Bright, willing her to understand. She wouldn't wish what she'd been through on anyone. Bright met her eyes. "I know you wouldn't," she said. "You're a good person." Jency smiled. "So are you." Bright rolled her eyes. "I don't know about that." "Are you kidding?" Jency gasped. "You're like the best person I know." "Well, you don't know everything," Bright responded. Jency heard what her friend wasn't saying. She felt the years and distance between them finally begin to erode. She had no right to know Bright's secrets, and yet, sitting there with her, talking like old times, it was possible that they could somehow get back to a place where she did. Her eyes flickered over to Lance and Deborah, chatting politely. She wanted him to walk away, or her to leave in a huff. She wanted him to stride over and sweep her into his embrace, give her a kiss like a returning soldier. And yet, Jency understood, there were the things she wished were true, and there was what was actually true. She was learning that there was usually a great distance between the two. Lance kept his distance from Deborah, wondering how in the hell this was happening. The afternoon had been like so many before it that summer. He'd had a few beers and felt the pleasant buzz he usually got, drinking and chatting the hours away. The group of them had formed a sort of club that summer, united by the near drowning and strengthened by a string of sunny afternoons spent trying to make sense of it. They talked about a variety of things, the latest neighborhood gossip, the weather, the news, the kids' antics. Sometimes Zell had a conversation starter, as she called it, some silly question or quote that would lead to deeper conversations. Sometimes they even shared personal stories, but never the ones that mattered. He hadn't, for instance, shared that, while he had no idea when she would come back, he'd felt Deborah returning as one felt an oncoming storm, the increasing awareness that something in the air was changing, gathering strength as it barreled forward. After she sheepishly left, he took his time gathering his things to leave, too, looking at Jency over at the pool with Bright, thinking of and dismissing a thousand things to say to her. He settled for a kiss on the forehead, promised to call her later. She nodded and said very little in response. Eventually, he walked away slowly, feeling as if he wasn't coming back, even though the pool would be open for several more weeks. Between Zell's absence and Deborah's appearance, he felt as if, though summer wasn't over, something was ending. He returned home to find Deborah at the kitchen table, waiting for him, looking penitent. "Mom!" Alec yelled, shoving from behind him to reach her, hurtling himself into her arms as if he hadn't quite believed she would be there as promised. Deborah, to her credit, managed to look humbled by her son's welcome instead of exultant, or worse, expectant. Lila, God lover, stayed beside Lance, her arms crossed like his as she took it all in. He gave his daughter a sidelong glance, anticipating her next move. Would she yell? Cry? Give in to her body's longing to reach out? He hadn't known Lila well when Deborah left. He knew her much better now, and yet he couldn't have said what his child was thinking as she registered her mother's presence in their home after a 10-month absence. He couldn't have told Lila how to react any more than he could have told himself. His wife was home. This was good news. His wife was home. This was terrible news. We have plans tonight, Lila said suddenly, turning to him. She looked over at Deborah. We're going to Taste of the Town, she explained, with Jency and Pilar and Zara. He rested his hand on top of Lila's head. We can go another time, he said, surprised by his words, by how easily he could break plans with Jency when faced with Deborah's very real presence. For so long, her return had been a fantasy played out in his mind in so many different ways. Lately, he'd tried not to think about it at all, focusing instead on Jency and the way her eyes crinkled at the corners when she smiled, the highlights in her hair that had grown brighter with each day in the sun, the way she tasted and smelled and felt. They had been careful to avoid the word love, and that had been wise. He was a man with obligations that ran beyond his feelings. You promised we could go, Lila yelled, interrupting his rapid-fire thoughts. Angry tears spilled from the corners of her eyes. You're going back on a promise! She turned and bolted from the room, leaving him and Deborah and Alec to blink at one another like strangers. She's in shock. He offered the excuse for Lila's behavior to Deborah, though he owed her none. I know, Deborah said, and I deserve it. She set Alec down on the ground. Why don't you go get that wetsuit off, and Daddy and I will talk, she said to him, falling back into the mother role so easily it was as if she'd never been gone. Lance watched as his son obediently trotted off to his room, thankful at least one of the kids wasn't having a complete meltdown. So, he said, you're back? Stupid question. Deborah nodded. I didn't think calling ahead would make it any easier. She gave a little laugh. I half expected the locks to be changed. He shook his head. I wouldn't lock you out of your own house. Is it? My house? He heard the hopeful note in her voice and regretted his choice of words. He shrugged his shoulders, made his voice sound businesslike. Legally, at least. I mean, there are no papers drawn up between us. Your stuff is still here. Your mail comes here. He gestured behind him, at a box on the floor he'd taken to throwing anything addressed to her into. It was nearly full of running magazines, catalogs, various solicitations, and a few personal letters. He started to get up and show it to her, but she reached out and stopped him. I don't want to know about legally. I want to know about us. She removed her hand from his arm, put it back in her own lap. I'm sorry. I'm coming on too strong, and I have no right. I know that. It's just a shock, seeing you again. She nodded, thinking this over. You should keep your plans tonight. They seem to mean a lot to Lila. They're friends of hers, he explained, though an explanation wasn't warranted. They moved into the neighborhood this summer, and we've hung out. We? Our families. She drew back, as if his calling what they were a family, even when she wasn't part of it, was somehow hurtful. And you're friends with the dad? She asked, pressing. The look on her face told him she already knew there was no dad. Somehow Deborah knew, when he still had no clue what had driven her to leave him the way she did. Maybe the difference was that Deborah wanted to know, and he didn't. It crossed his mind that she wanted to be absolved, but he had no proof of that. All Deborah had ever admitted was that she needed time away to think about what she wanted out of life. He'd suspected there was someone else. That part of her decision-making was whether she wanted another man. But she'd refused to give him any more information than that. No, he said simply. The mom. I see, Deborah said. Which wasn't true, of course. She didn't see at all. She hadn't been there to see. His legs were growing stiff from standing, but he didn't dare sit. To sit across from her at their kitchen table would be far too intimate. He could not be intimate with her. He did not know, standing there with his aching legs and fickle heart, if he could be intimate with her again. She didn't fit in this room anymore. Her presence poisoned the air. And yet, she belonged here. She was his wife, the mother of his children. If she was back and wanted a chance to make things work, he owed his family that chance, didn't he? He'd known this moment would eventually come, and now it was time to do the right thing. He turned from her and went to look out the window, his gaze falling on Zell's house. He'd missed Zell today, missed her witticisms and cantankerous outlook on life, the way she was always smacking him on the shoulder when he teased her, how she tended to them all, ever the nurturer. She'd grown on him. They all had. Yet this thing with Ty had made things weird, and soon Kaylee was going back to her mother. The summer was drawing to a close. Hadn't they just been teasing the kids about school starting this afternoon? And it all felt suddenly very sad. In his heart, he was already letting Jency go, working out how to say goodbye to the best friend he'd had in a long, long time. He glanced over at Deborah, looking mournful at the table.
"I'm going to go cancel my plans for tonight. Maybe you should go up and try to talk to your daughter."
He grabbed his phone from the counter and trudged outside, his heart aching as he found the last number called and hit redial. Kaylee. Ever since they found out about Ty, Zell had stayed inside, refusing to come to the pool and cooking up a storm instead. The house smelled good, and there were always cookies cooling on the counter. More cookies than any of us could eat. She kept sending stuff over to Mr. Doyle's house, making me carry food across the street nearly every day, forgetting all about her warning to stay away from him. He always opened the door with that little smile, told me what a good girl I was for bringing him food. I told him I wasn't doing much, just delivering. Then one day he asked me if I was ready to earn some money to finish the pond he'd started for his mother. I gave him a confused look and almost said, "But she's dead." Then I thought maybe that wasn't the nicest thing to say. He knew what my confused look was, though.
"I'm going to finish it in honor of her. A memorial," he explained. "That way Jesse and I can sit outside by the pond and think about her."
I'd never seen Jesse sit still if there wasn't a video game involved, but I didn't say that. He rested his hand on my head and looked sad.
"I was inspired by what you and Zell have done," he said, and pointed across the street at our pond, which had shaped up nicely, if I did say so myself. "You've created something so lovely."
"I better go ask Zell," I said. "She might have something else she needs me to do." The truth was, I didn't know how Zell would feel about that. Carrying food over to his house and coming back home was one thing, but working for him for an afternoon might be another.
"Okay, well, go on and ask. And if you can, you should change into some work clothes and come back right away."
He got this nervous look on his face for about a minute. Then he smiled at me and waved me in the direction of Zell's house. I hurried back across the street, hoping Zell would say yes.
"Zell!"
I hollered when I got inside the house. She came limping into the kitchen, looking startled. She'd been so jumpy and weird since everyone had found out about Ty. I guess she thought people would think bad of her because of what her son did. But I didn't ask her about it. I just let her keep on cooking stuff and hoped she'd snap out of it. "Can I go help Mr. Doyle make a pond in his backyard? He asked me to, and said he'd pay me." I raised my eyebrows and gave her my serious look. "I could really use the money," I added. Zell laughed, but I didn't see anything that was funny. She glanced in the direction of the Doyle house, looking concerned. It was quiet as she thought about it for a few seconds. "He's doing it for his mom." I realized how weird that sounded. "In her memory," I explained. "Isn't that nice?" I gave her my puppy dog eyes. That's what my mom always called them. "I only use the puppy dog eyes for special occasions. If you use them too much, they didn't work the same. It was better to hold them back for when you really needed them. My mom called it bringing out the big guns."
Zell walked over to the door that led from the kitchen out onto her driveway. She opened the door and leaned out, looking at Mr. Doyle's house, then back over her shoulder at me. She raised her eyebrows, giving me a serious look. "I'm going to carry my magazine and sit out on the driveway in one of the deck chairs, so I'll be nearby if you need me. I want you to peek your head around the corner and wave at me ever so often, okay?" she asked. I nodded my head really hard. "Okay," I said. Then I ran off to change my clothes before she could change her mind, calling, "Thank you," over my shoulder on my way up the stairs. In Ty's room, I threw on some work clothes, the same ones I wore all those long, hot days when we worked on Zell's yard. When I got back to Mr. Doyle's house, he pointed me toward a big pile of flat, jagged, dark gray rocks he was going to use to border the pond. But what he showed me didn't look a thing like our pond. It only looked like a big old mud pit. He could use some lessons from Zell, but I didn't say that. I just thought about what I was going to buy with the money he gave me. A present for Cutter. A present for my mom. I carried those heavy rocks back and forth. Back and forth, the sun beating down as I worked. Every so often, I kept my promise to Zell and poked my head around the corner to wave at her that I was safe. I was a sweaty mess, and my head hurt from the sun. The work was hard and long, and I was starting to think maybe the money wasn't worth it. Mr. Doyle was trying to install a fancy fountain, but it wasn't going so well. He was cussing and sweating, his frustration growing the hotter it got. He went inside to get us water bottles and left me out there alone, and I took the opportunity to stop moving for a few minutes. I stared at my reflection in the sliding glass door that led into his basement. I thought of the padlock he'd had to have to keep his mother from falling down those basement stairs. I wondered if he'd taken it off the door yet, seeing as how he didn't need it. I stared at the glass door so long, I thought I saw the curtain move, and it spooked me. I thought of his mother, and wondered about a ghost. I took a step away from the door, my reflection growing smaller as I did. Mr. Doyle came around the corner and called my name. He handed me a water bottle. "Break's over," he said. "Back to work." He turned me around and pointed to the rocks. Then he resumed working on the fountain. I sucked down half the bottle and started arranging the rocks. We worked side by side like that for a while. I could smell our sweat in the air, mixing with the heat. I wished I'd never said I would do this. I glanced back at the curtain hanging over the sliding glass door, but I never saw it move again. My mind was playing tricks on me in the heat, and there was no such thing as ghosts. When we were finally finished, he dug in his pocket for the money and fished it out, holding it up to me. I went to reach for it, but he stopped me. "I get a hug first," he said. He was sweaty and he stank. I didn't want to hug him, but I wanted that money, and I got the feeling I had to hug him to get it. I couldn't tell how much money was in his hand, but it looked like a lot. I stepped toward him and let him pull me into his arms. He was a lonely man who'd lost his mother. So what if he stank to high heaven? The hug would last a second, and then I could go home and shower. He pulled back and looked at me, and then he moved his face closer, his mouth closing over mine before I knew what was happening. He used his lips to pry mine open and put his tongue in my mouth. I tried to get away, but he held me in place. Mr. Doyle was surprisingly strong when he wanted to be. He should have been the one carrying those rocks. He stopped kissing me, and I looked away, toward the direction of Zell's house, longing to run back to it. But he held me in place, one hand on each arm. My mind was racing with a million thoughts about how gross and awful what he'd done was. I expected him to apologize. But all he'd said was, "Don't ever tell anyone I did that." He didn't have to worry about that. I would never tell anyone. It was too terrible to say out loud. Then he handed me the money and released me. I ran away from him as fast as I could, still feeling his fat eel tongue inside my mouth, unsure whether I would ever outrun what had just happened. Zell sat with her magazine in the driveway, but instead of reading, she found herself mostly just staring at James Doyle's house. She caught glimpses of Kaylee, trudging back and forth, lugging those rocks, and occasionally, as promised, she popped her head around the corner and waved, her wave growing less enthusiastic each time. It was hot as Hades out. Zell decided she needed a spray bottle to spritz water on herself, and dashed inside to get it. She was coming out of her house with the water when she saw Deborah walking toward her, emerging from the heat waves like a mirage. Zell nearly turned back to hide inside her house, but Deborah had already seen her. She still looked as fabulous as the day she'd left. Zell made her mouth do something that came close to a smile and waggled the water in Deborah's direction.
"Hello," she said, being neighborly. "I didn't realize you were back."
That was a lie. She knew everything that went on in Lance's house. Sometime in the past 10 months, she'd started thinking of it as his house, not Deborah's. This, she felt, was significant. She'd seen Deborah's car pull up just a few afternoons ago, watched from her kitchen window as she let herself in, just as pretty as you please. Zell had thought to herself, "Oh, no, you don't." She paused on the stairs and let Deborah come to her, her heart pounding away, knocking against her ribcage more urgently the closer Deborah got. She tried to gauge what the other woman would do. Yell? Deny? Apologize? Threaten? She hadn't spoken to her in so long. In that last encounter, there hadn't been much said. This moment had been inevitable, coming as certainly as the end of summer, Kaylee's departure, and everything else she'd dreaded.
"It sure is hot out," Zell said, just to talk about something.
But she knew Deborah hadn't come over to discuss the weather. "Yes," the other woman responded, her voice hesitant.
"Was it this hot wherever you were?"
Zell regretted the question the minute it was out of her mouth. Deborah might think she was prying into where she'd gone, when the truth was, it didn't matter a hill of beans where she'd been. All that mattered was that she'd run away from her family, her home, her responsibilities. A good mother didn't do that. Zell tried to take comfort in the difference between them. No matter what she'd done, she'd never abandoned the people she claimed to love. And yet, she thought of Ty, how she'd avoided him ever since the truth had come out, the shame she'd taken on over what he'd done. But it was more than that. It was her shame, too. She'd been too ashamed to seek help for her injury, too ashamed to admit what had happened.
"I just wanted to clear the air," Deborah said. "Make sure there was nothing we needed to say to each other after what happened."
Zell was quick to reassure her.
"No, not at all. Things are fine. It's your business."
Deborah's voice was quiet and even. "Well, you kind of made it your business."
"I'm sorry about that," she said. "I really am."
"Yes, well, I also just need to know what you've said about what happened, to Lance or to anyone else who might say something to Lance." Zell looked away.
"I didn't say anything to anyone."
"Good," Deborah nodded to herself. "That's good." She looked in her own backyard, right at the spot where it had started. "We're going to work on our marriage and make a fresh start."
"Are you moving back in?"
"Well, not right away, of course, but in time I expect that to happen."
"Does that mean you're not going to tell him what happened?"
Zell couldn't keep the incredulity out of her voice. Deborah swallowed, glanced over at her house. "It's in the past. There's no need."
"I just think secrets can be harmful. They can eat at you, wear away the foundation of..."
Deborah's voice changed, and she held her hand up. "You're hardly one to lecture me about keeping secrets, aren't you?" Movement over at the Bryson house caught Zell's eye, and she looked over to see Alex standing on the side porch,
watching them inquisitively. She would miss the children. She sensed Deborah would do whatever she could to keep them away from her, now that she was back. She didn't exactly blame her. Alec waved at her and hollered,
"Miss Zell, we're going to the pool as a family."
Both women heard that last word, his emphasis on the word family.
"I think that's my cue," Deborah said, taking a step back toward her house. "I'm glad to know you won't do something that would hurt our family." She waved at Alec. "I'm coming, honey," she called to him.
Deborah hustled back toward Alec, just as Kaylee came trotting up the drive, running like someone was chasing her. She was caked in dirt and sweat and smelled like it. She came to a stop beside Zell, and together they watched Deborah trudge across her own driveway and disappear inside her house.
"Is that Lila and Alex, Mom?" Kaylee asked.
But instead of watching Deborah, she glanced over her shoulder at the Doyle house. She moved closer to Zell.
"Yes," Zell answered idly as the door closed behind Deborah.
She directed Kaylee into the house, still trying to process what had just happened. She might have been the reason Deborah had left, but she wasn't the reason she'd stayed away. And now that she'd decided to return, she expected Zell to keep her secret. But Zell was tired of doing that. And yet, could she tell Lance what she knew? Now, after all this time? Did she dare confess what she'd done and what she knew after everything else that had happened?
"I wish she hadn't come back," Kaylee said,
giving voice to Zell's thoughts. Zell said the right thing in response instead of what she wanted to say.
"I'm sure Lila and Alec don't feel that way. Let's let them have their family time," she said,
thinking of how Deborah had used that word against her.
"And you and I will get cleaned up, then go get some ice cream. How does that sound?"
She feigned more enthusiasm than she felt. The heat combined with her conversation with Deborah had left her winded and exhausted. But this was Kaylee's last day with her, and she wanted it to count. Bright. Walking across the hotel lobby, Bright felt less propelled than pulled by the sight of Trent sitting alone on one of the couches, talking on the phone, holding court, even though he had no subjects at the moment. When he turned, saw her, and smiled, she knew she wasn't there about the job. She paused and let the truth hit her, the force of it surging through the core of her. It had never been about the job, no matter what she'd spent the past weeks telling herself. She swallowed the truth down, let it settle inside of her, and continued toward him, focusing on his face. How uncanny the resemblance to Everett was. Trent gestured for her to have a seat and held up one finger. She did as she was told and sat down, smoothing her skirt and wondering if she looked okay. He ended his call and turned his smile on her. He reached across the space between them and rested his hand on her knee.
"Wow, it's good to see you,"
he nodded as if agreeing with himself. She smiled.
"You too."
He shook his head.
"I'm still sort of shocked you wanted to meet. I thought I'd lost you for good."
"He's talking about the job," she coached herself. "He's not talking about the two of you."
She willed her smile to stay in place.
"No, just been busy."
"You said you've been out of work for a time and are looking to break back in?"
His brows drew together in concern.
"Everything been okay?"
"Oh, sure, everything's been fine. My husband and I moved and we, had a child and things have just been crazy. I'm just now able to start thinking about going back."
"Oh, man, you had a kid?"
he asked, his face shone.
"That's cool. Boy or girl?"
"A little boy,"
she swallowed.
"Christopher."
She shifted in her seat and smoothed out her skirt again. She wanted to get up and run out of there. She knew she wouldn't be going back to work. She would miss her son too much. She would miss his sticky kisses and their walks around the neighborhood. She would miss reading him a story before his nap, and the warm, sleepy smell of him when he woke up. She would miss hearing the children's programming on the TV in the other room as she made his lunches. She couldn't leave it up to someone else. She closed her eyes for a fraction of a second, erasing the image of her son from her mind so she could focus on the reason she was there. She looked back at Trent Miller and admitted to herself why she was there. It wasn't about the job. It wasn't about catching up with him. It was about what Everett had been asking for months, and the only way she knew to make it happen. Everett. Everett had been relieved when Bright scheduled her meeting for the same afternoon as his appointment, but dismayed when she told him what she was going to meet about. She wouldn't be home when he got home, which gave him time to think over how he was going to present whatever the doctor said to him. He would have a glass of wine or two, play with his son, and go over the best way to approach her while he waited for her. Trouble was, he now had two challenges: to talk her into whatever the doctor said, and to talk her out of getting a job right now if that meant they would not pursue having a second child. Of course, she had the right to go back to work if she wanted. He was just surprised that that was what she wanted all of a sudden. Until recently, she'd been happy at home. His talk of another child had sent her running in the other direction, and he needed to find out why. "I'm just covering my bases," she'd assured him that morning. "Seeing what my options are, it could be good for us." The doctor bustled into his office and sat down at his desk, interrupting his thoughts. Dr. Ferguson opened a file folder and looked it over, then looked up.
"I'll say it again that this is quite unusual, having a husband come in without his wife."
He gave Everett a conspiratorial smile, as if the two of them were in cahoots. He thought inexplicably of the kids he'd grown up with in the neighborhood, their many games of boys versus girls.
"I'm just covering my bases," Everett said, echoing Bright. "Seeing what my options are."
Dr. Ferguson looked down at the chart. He kept his eyes on the words and numbers printed there when he spoke again.
"Are you here to discuss a donor?" he asked. "I know some men struggle with that, but it's done more often than you might think."
Everett's heart rate picked up, and he stared at the bald spot on the top of the doctor's head as he processed his words.
A donor? For, what?"
He managed to stammer the words out. The other man raised his head.
"A sperm donor," he said.
There was a weariness in his voice, a heaviness that told Everett he hadn't wanted to say it out loud. No man wanted to tell another man he shot blanks, even if it was part of his job. The doctor flipped through the file in front of him to avoid his eyes.
"That's really your only option," he said to the paper.
Everett stood up abruptly, his sudden movement startling the doctor.
"You know, you're probably right," he said. "I should probably come back another time, with my wife."
Dr. Ferguson blinked at him a few times. Everett considered just bolting out of the room. In the silence, he was already piecing it together. If he was infertile, if they needed a donor to get pregnant, then where had his son come from?
"You didn't know," the doctor said in realization.
Everett considered lying, but how could he lie about this?
"Oh, sure, I knew. I just forgot."
He exhaled loudly. "No," he said. "She'd never told me, and I never asked. When she got pregnant, I was just happy." He looked up at the doctor and decided he never wanted to see this man again. If it meant they never had another child, so be it. "I was just really happy." He started to walk out of the office, but the doctor's voice stopped him. He stood still but didn't bother to meet the other man's eyes this time.
"Mr. Lewis," he said, "you can still be happy."
Everett nodded once, then fled. Right. Trent still drank gin and tonics, and he still drank a lot of them. She watched him down the second one just as fast as the first, then raise his hand for another. His tolerance had to be incredible. Her own tolerance had dropped off significantly since she'd become a mother, and 6 a.m. wake-up calls became de rigueur. It hadn't taken him long to suggest they move from the hotel bar to the hotel couches. She stirred her drink, a weak crown and ginger, and took a polite, dainty sip. The last time she'd matched him, drink for drink. When she'd stood to her feet and swayed upon standing, he'd been quick to offer to help her to her room, extending his arm gallantly. She'd rested her own hand unsteadily in the crook of his elbow and given him a coquettish smile. Tonight she met his eyes and saw not quite the same look she'd gotten that long ago evening, but a look that was on the verge of that one. "Stay for dinner," he said. "We'll talk more about the job and where I could use you." She almost said, "Oh, what the hell," and ordered another drink. For a moment, she was tempted to let things go the way they once went. It would work out just the way it had before. She knew that in her depths, the same way she'd known it back then, the knowledge settling inside her like a stone dropped into water. But Everett's face filled her mind, edging out any possibility she might have been considering. Whatever she'd come here to do wasn't going to happen. Time had passed. Things were different. She wasn't a woman who could do that. She never really had been. Though her son wasn't a mistake, what she'd done had been. She would wrestle with that for the rest of her life. She smiled without showing any teeth and looked back down at her drink. "Can't," she said.
"Oh, yeah, the kid."
He rolled his eyes. "Yes, there's dinner and bath time and story and..." She looked up at him as Christopher's face filled her mind. She held up her hands. "It's quite a production." He received a fresh drink from the bartender and gave it a vigorous stir.
"Sounds like it."
He took a greedy gulp and leered at her.
"If I were you, I'd welcome a break from it."
The words were on the tip of her tongue. "Well, you're not me." But there was no point in being contentious. She needed to get out of there as politely and quickly as she could. He was still a good business contact, someone she might need someday. No sense making things weird between them. Weirder. "Actually, I enjoy it, as strange as that sounds." She made a production of checking her phone for the time. "In fact, I better be going." She pulled her wallet from her purse to pay for her drink, but he held up his hand.
"I've got this. Business expense."
She'd always been business to him, and that was good. That was what she needed him to think. She didn't need his affection, his emotion, his reminiscences of that night. He'd served his purpose when she needed him. She cringed internally at the thought of what Trent Miller had been to her. She put her wallet away and gave him what she hoped passed for a grateful smile. "Thank you," she said. She made sure she looked him in the eye when she thanked him, held his gaze. She leaned over and kissed his cheek, leaving the faintest imprint of her lips behind as she pulled away. "It was so good to see you again." He looked at her and raised his eyebrows, his expression reminding her of Christopher.
"Call me if you ever need... anything," he said.
He gave her that captain of industry grin and turned back to his drink. She rose from the bar and left him behind. Wright slid into her car, pulse racing as though she'd just escaped from a crazed killer instead of a handsome man who'd been interested in more than just her resume. She closed the car door harder than necessary, the slamming sound reverberating in the mostly empty parking garage. She turned the key in the ignition and the radio came on loud, blasting an oldie station she'd played on the drive over. She reached for the knob and turned it down. She just wanted silence. At the same moment that her hand touched the knob, the sound of singing voices registered in her head, making a kind of unexpected sense. Heart singing, Anne and Nancy's voices blending. She turned down the volume and leaned back against the seat with a sigh, the fingers of a headache beginning to massage her brain. It had been that damn heart song that had started everything. She recalled the image of sliding into the rental car that afternoon, nearly 4 years ago, her heart heavy with what she'd just learned from the doctor. heart was singing then, too, a lost hit that she'd forgotten all about until she heard it that day. As she listened to the words, the kernel of an idea took root in her mind, a vague what-if she had never intended to go through with, until that very night she did. She shook her head to dislodge the memory and put the car into reverse, easing out of the parking space and pointing herself in the direction of home. She couldn't get there fast enough. Once she got home, she could stop thinking of all this nonsense, immerse herself in her husband and child, in dinner and bath and story and bed, in the familiarity of a home she didn't deserve, but was desperate to hang on to. Her mistake was in the past, and with any luck, she would keep it there forever. The noise of the television playing cartoons was the first thing she heard when she stepped inside the house. Bright let the sound of normality wash over her as she stepped into the kitchen, already looking toward the opening the refrigerator and what she would pull out to cook, just to keep busy. But when she turned and saw Everett sitting at the kitchen table, she knew instinctively it wasn't going to be that simple. His eyes, as they met hers, told her that something had happened while she was away. Something terrible. "What's wrong?" she asked, her insides turning to jelly. She stepped toward him, and he put up his hand like a traffic cop. "Don't come any closer," he was saying. She stopped moving, her hand resting on the kitchen island. "I saw Dr. Ferguson today," he said. "No, no, 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 no," her mind screamed. "This can't be happening. Not now." She blinked at him and said nothing. "I'd intended it to be a surprise for you. Instead, I got the surprise," Everett added. He gave a little bitter laugh. She nodded once and closed her eyes to block the vision of his mournful face. Her stomach twisted in on itself, and she gripped the island harder. "He's not..." His voice gave out and he swallowed, cleared his throat, a choking sound. He tried his voice again. "He's not mine." She understood that he wasn't asking a question, that he'd drawn his own conclusion with no help or explanation. She nodded again and looked down, studying her white knuckles. She was hanging on to this island, and suddenly the name of this kitchen fixture had taken on a whole new meaning. "Who?" he asked. The word felt like a slap, and she felt the impact of it reverberate through her. She'd been waiting for this moment, dreading that one word, for a long time. She took a deep breath before answering. "Someone from work." She paused. "It doesn't matter." He narrowed his eyes at her, leaned forward as if he were trying to get a good look at her. "Doesn't matter?" His voice was incredulous. "Of course it does!" She looked toward the den, where Christopher was watching TV. She shushed him, turning to him with fire in her eyes. He leaned back, chastised. "You're his father," she said, keeping her voice even and calm with something inside her she didn't know she possessed. "Yeah. That's what I thought until this afternoon, and you let me think that like an idiot." "You are his father," she said again, "in every way that counts." She thought of Christopher's biological father tossing back gin and tonics like water, loving the sound of his own voice, reeking of a confidence that, in a weak moment years ago, had seemed like a good quality. She wanted no part of Trent, except the part that had been invisible to the naked eye, the part that had enabled her to become a mother. She'd absconded with that part, and he'd never missed it, sleeping oblivious, his arms thrown over his head while she crept out of his hotel room as light dawned in the window over the bed. Everett sighed, a long exhalation that sounded like it was coming from the huge crack in his chest. A crack she'd created just the same as if she'd swung a hatchet and lodged it there. She crossed over to him and knelt in front of him, her words tumbling out. "The words, I'm sorry, fall so short, but I was crazed over what I'd learned about you, about us, and I thought it would be a way that we could still have the family we wanted, and... She stopped, knowing how stupid this would sound, but also knowing she had to admit it. I thought no one ever had to know and no one would get hurt. I was so, so stupid. She tried to catch his eye, but he wouldn't look back at her. He kept his gaze just over the top of her head, looking instead at the refrigerator just behind her, papered with photos and reminders of the life they had together, their little family of three. He'd wanted nothing but that, and she'd been determined to give it to him. A long silence passed. Her knees ached from stooping in front of him, but she didn't dare move. She kept her posture penitent, staying as close as he would allow.
"Is that who you met today? The guy from work?"
He gave a little ironic laugh. "I thought it was weird that you suddenly wanted to go back to work." He shook his finger at her. "But I believed you." He put his hand back in his lap and kept his gaze there. "I always believed you." Her knees throbbing, she eased out of the position she was in and slumped into the chair next to his. She let the silence stretch between them for a few minutes as she gathered her words. She kept her gaze on the top of his head, willing him to look up, even though she knew it was futile. She began to speak. "You got called into that big meeting that day, and you couldn't go to the doctor with me. You told me to tell you what I found out, and you said it so flippantly as you walked out the door. You said, 'You tell the doc we're up for the challenge.' You kissed my forehead and sauntered out the door, and I so envied you, your ability to always expect the best. I'd lost that more and more with each passing month we didn't get pregnant." She paused for him to speak, but he didn't, so she continued. "So after the doctor told me what he found, I walked around numb for a while, just trying to figure out how to tell you and what it meant. And I decided exactly what to say, had this whole rousing speech ready to give you. But when you walked in and asked how it went, I couldn't bring myself to tell you that it was you, that no amount of trying was going to fix what was wrong."
"So you lied to me," he said.
She started to tell him it wasn't a lie, but he was right. It was. "Yes," she said. "I told you that we'd just have to try harder, and that night we did try. And all I could think while it was happening was, I'm probably ovulating and it doesn't even matter." She caught his eye, finally, and held his gaze. "It was never going to matter," she said, without flinching.
"So you got back at me?" He gave her a challenging look. "Because I couldn't get you pregnant? Found someone who could?"
She shook her head, leaned toward him imploringly. "No," she said, the word emphatic. "Getting back at you never entered my mind. Keeping you did." She tried to catch his eye again, but he wouldn't look at her. "You wanted a child, a family, so much. We were so close to having everything we've talked about. I couldn't face what might happen if we couldn't."
"What might happen?"
he asked. Her voice was very quiet, barely more than a whisper. "You might stop loving me." She watched as the words sank in, hopeful that they might change the direction of the conversation. But when he spoke, it was clear he wanted to keep fighting, if only, she knew, to keep the pain at bay for a bit longer.
"So you just took matters into your own hands?"
He gestured toward the den and the cartoons and the little boy watching them in rapt attention. She was grateful Christopher loved TV the way he did at that moment. "The next day I left for a work trip, if you remember. It was a trade show, and while I was there I met this recruiter. He was there to scope out the industry's talent, and he and I talked. We..." She didn't know how to finish the sentence. How could she describe what had happened between them? He had looked so much like Everett that it had drawn her to him. He'd been charming, disarming her as they talked and laughed and drank some more. The hours ticked away, and suddenly she was drunk, and he was offering. When she'd woken up the next morning with him beside her, it had been too late to take it back. And when she puked for the first time a month later, she'd known. She'd known that they were having a baby, and she let Everett believe it had happened the same night the doctor told them to just try harder. She'd let him believe it because she wanted to believe it too. She wanted to protect